think important to be really deliberate in how you partner and collaborate, and also play to each other's strengths. So you're all aligned on what success looks like, how you're responding to briefs, and actually showing up as one unified team to get better work.
My name is Ellie Angel and welcome to Managing Marketing, a podcast where we discuss the issues and opportunities facing marketing, media and advertising with industry thought leaders and practitioners. And remember, if you are enjoying the Managing Marketing podcast, please either like, review or share this episode to help spread the words of wisdom from our guests each week. And today I'm joined by someone very wise. She's smiling at me. Gemma Downey, Group General Manager of Commercial Excellence at Asahi Beverages Australia. Welcome, Gemma, and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Ellie, for having me.
You're welcome. So there's lots and lots and lots of things that I'd love to talk to you about. We've only got like half an hour, so I'm going to focus on some big stuff that I know we've discussed in the past. Let's talk about agencies, and particularly in-housing of agencies. This is where we should probably start. I think the in-house marketing agency model falls under your remit, one of the constituent parts of your remit, but because of experimentation and consolidation of agency supply models has really been a hot topic for some years now, and we've seen organisations enter and retreat, and some like CUB prior to becoming part of the Asahi Group have really been front runners in this space. I think, so you personally, you've experienced that. What have you learned?
What have we learned? Well, I think it's more what haven't we learned on this journey. We're still learning, very much so. But let me maybe talk about a few of the big things. I think the first thing is it's not about building a agency services model. I think really where a more strategic place to start is actually how you're building capability, critical capability for your business, starting there and then working back around what are the actual services that you're looking to deliver, because you're pushing then upstream more and you're actually solving some of the bigger business challenges. And so for us, really, it was all around building a center of gravity around the consumer. So once we understood that, it was how do we then supercharge that, you know, kind of that goal? How do we drive actionable insight around the people that we're ultimately trying to sell our products to? And that has then led us to building our first party data ecosystem. How do we think about CX? How do we think about media and creativity? And how all does that all work together as one engine? So that's probably number one. I think the second one I would say is having a really solid approach to workflow and prioritization. It's really important because you become all things to all people as the in-house agency and a real catch-all for things. And that's part of your USP. You can deliver things, at scale and, you know, and have a lot of agility to that. But if you don't actually define that workload prioritization, it can become very, very challenging to manage. And I think about our team, we delivered around 3,000 briefs last year across around 30 brands. Yeah. And for a team of, roughly 65 people or so, it sounds like a lot, but actually when you look at that scale, it's really quite immense. So how do you prioritise the work? I think the third thing I would say is it's really important to build great culture, and it sounds really obvious, but when you work in an organisation, the organisation already has its own culture that you subscribe to and you're a part of, but I still think it's really important for these in-house agency groups to define their own, because it's key around how you can attract talent, specifically creative talent. The fourth and final one I'll say is probably around the broader agency village, and it's, I think, important to be really deliberate in how you partner and collaborate with the agency village, and also play to each other's strengths. So you're all aligned on what success looks like, how you're responding to briefs, and actually showing up as one unified team to get better work.
Yeah. The phrase running through my head as you talk through those, it's the obvious benefit of an in-house group. And by the way, there's obviously still role for external agency suppliers, and you work with external agency suppliers, so this isn't about us versus them.
No.
But everything you're talking about talks to the phrase I had running through in my head was just tailored to fit. And it's an obvious kind of benefit. You know, you're able to shape to your own image as opposed to completely relying on an external partner. But so easy to say and so hard to do, right? I mean, how long has that, those four things, how long has that taken? You're still on the journey, right? But that's taken a long time, I guess, to really pull together.
Yeah, we're absolutely still on the journey. And I would even say, I think another piece around it is always having being dynamic as part of your DNA, because what made sense 12 months ago doesn't necessarily make sense today. So how can you have that as a principle around how you continue to optimize your model and your design, and ultimately how you you partner in with your stakeholders is key. And people ask me a lot, you know, where do I start if I want to build an in-house agency, and people are kind of looking to go into this space, and it's not really about where I think they should start. It's actually about where they think they should start for their business, and that will unlock really, I think, the clues about what they should build first.
That's really important, because where we've seen there have been organisations, I'm talking globally here, not just Australia, who have entered into this thing and then pulled out of it quite quickly. So the consistency that's required to build what you're saying obviously is longer than a 12-month, 24-month project. And what we've seen in our work with others is a classic case of kind of unrealistic expectations being placed on a group of people who really need to grow properly.
Yeah, for sure.
Is that ringing true with you? I mean, that consistency you've applied over how many years you've been doing this now?
Yeah, definitely. And I think probably a key point of that is I just think that the actual financial model around an in-house agency. Yes. So, you know, it's actually somewhat easy to get up. Like, you know, to spin it up, kind of a lean model, you're really looking at where you can find pockets of efficiency and then how you can then reinvest that into talent so it is cost neutral. But once you've exhausted that and there's no more pockets of efficiency to find, it's really about proving value. Mm-hmm. And actually the job to be done is more around how you're actually driving business and or commercial measures and commercial outcomes that then continue to kind of validate the model.
Yeah. And how about... We're getting a bit more into this now, but how about resourcing? Because, I mean, I know on the agency side, it's really tough. It's really tough to find people. How do you sell in an in-house option to someone who perhaps has worked in agency land for a long time?
I think we're quite fortunate here at Asahi because of our incredible portfolio of brands. So
that is true. They were all on the waters. I was getting thirsty just walking in, looking at them all. Yeah,
I think for a lot of people in the sort of in ad land really and kind of in agencies, it is a bit of a dream to work on some of these brands. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just a big tick. And then again, we just have to make sure that the quality of the work that we're delivering is on par to the kind of quality of the work that they would ultimately get through the agencies. You know, decent budgets, mm-hmm. you know, good, meaty, interesting briefs. And then again, that back to that point I said before about the culture, again, being known to have great culture internally as well, hopefully kind of is another. Yeah.
Oh, look, and the process. I mean, you're talking about, you know, you've mentioned media there, but also you've mentioned creative, and of course, that's not always easy to get together, right? And I guess that's a huge advantage of having it all in one house. And if I was an agency person looking, and someone came to me from Asahi, that would be interesting to me to actually really work with a conjoined team. Mm-hmm. So look, I mean, it's great. You're obviously kicking goals, and you've learned a lot, and clearly you're applying that, and which is amazing. Because I think a lot of organisations, like I say, don't have the patience to really see it through.
Trinity P3.
Well, you've been around for a long time in this organisation, right?
So
that sounds terrible,
like a dinosaur.
Isn't it? It sounds terrible. You are a wonderfully, wonderfully astute professional who has built a career here, shall we say.
That sounds good. It'll be 5 years this April.
There you go.
I've been with the organisation.
So you have been part of the organisation pre and post acquisition. I'm interested in that because clearly there's probably been some evolution from a marketing perspective and some mind shifts that you've had to make in taking on a much broader portfolio of brands and products. How have you found that?
Well, look, I mean, the obvious one is we've got bigger, haven't we?
Yes, of course.
So, you know, really that piece is how do we scale responsibly? How do we look at the kind of the portfolio at large? And again, the benefit that we sit in now as Asahi Beverages is we have a beverage for every occasion. We can appeal to that broad repertoire for people. And so that's awesome. That's an awesome proposition. But equally, it's like, how do you actually scale the resource accordingly around that? And, you know, a big piece is how do we look at making our budgets work harder for us? So really driving more for less. Mm-hmm. How do we make choices around the brands and the budgets and the work that we want to go after and the stuff that's really going to move the needle? Back to that prioritization piece again is absolutely key. But also I just think a big part is is also around the consumer. You know, actually going back again to that center of gravity that we've talked about, how we've been mm-hmm. building around, is really with such a broad and vast portfolio that can appeal to so many different consumer needs, how do you actually truly understand the modern consumer and what they want? So we can be more targeted and more tailored and more personalized in ultimately how we're showing up in market to be mm-hmm. more distinct. So, again, that has been like an even deepening, I think, of that capability.
Yeah, I was going to say that because I was thinking about that as you were talking. Clearly, having there's no doubt. I mean, budgets don't just increase exponentially. You are clearly going to have to do more with less. And from a portfolio management and a prioritization perspective, yes, of course. But then Asahi coming into this organization, presumably your data capability and your the amount that you have to play with is probably mm-hmm. a lot. You can go a lot deeper and a lot broader, right? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Which then has halo effects on other brands that you've been working on.
Absolutely. Yeah, and really taking that category mindset.
Yes. Okay. Well, I mean, from a marketing perspective, it's like challenge but massive opportunity. I mean, there's just massive opportunity, right?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. But, of course, marketing isn't actually all of your role. We've not even covered all of your role yet. It encompasses marketing, but you're heading up a commercial excellence team. And, you know, I'm interested in that because of marketing and its attributable value to sales, which is been a holy grail for so long. And it's really challenging. Of course, everyone wants marketing to be integrated and be attributable to commercial success. And I'm betting that you've got some pretty big keys that you've used to try and unlock wins in that space. How have you done that? I'm asking for your secrets now, but what are the secrets? What are the secrets?
I can give you a few
What's
secrets.
What's the secret sauce here?
Yeah, well, look, and we've spoken about this previously right? This is, and I love this question. Again, it's, you know, I think we're on the journey of working through this. I think the steps we're taking, number one, is ensuring that everyone is on the same page when it comes to what success looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to get that alignment across in-house, marketing, exec, agencies, everyone like shooting for success through the same lens is really key. So once you've done that, it's okay, well, if that's what success looks like and that's what we're going after, commercial success,
mm-hmm.
commercial results, what are the metrics that matter? Like actually how do we measure that? And we've just done a big piece of work actually on really streamlining how we think about digital mm-hmm. And performance in digital and what we're actually measuring there and the real focus around that. And equally, we also have a MMM or MROI platform, Growth OS, which is through the Mutinex team, which is, again, we're really lucky to have great partners with them and a great sophisticated tool. It's dynamic and we can look at the data in, you know, dynamic dashboards that help us understand creative and geography and channels and really interesting kind of insights. But it's super hard to embed that. Like it takes a cultural shift.
Yes.
Not only just getting people comfortable with the tool itself and actually have a look at the analytics and actually then drive insight from that and build that literacy, but also even just getting it operationalized, making sure good data is going in there, so you're actually getting good insight out. So that's been a journey for us, but it's a critical one that really will sit at the heart of kind of what we do and how we think about commercial outcomes. And then I think once you've landed that and you've landed your tool and you've landed your technology, you know what kind of your metrics, you know what you're measuring, it really is building repetition and it is really building kind of the literacy and the capability around understanding the data, understanding the insight, and then applying that in consistent ways to everything we do and building that culture around it.
It's such a brilliant answer and you covered pretty much everything, but you know what, I think the most critical thing you said in all of that, and when you see this all the time, and I saw it in my agency career all the time, was once you've operationalized it, once people are using it properly, once they've learned it, you know, I've never seen an area where the KISS principle, you know, keep it simple, stupid, having that North Star, because it's so easy to get lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, one little indicator over here has the board jumping up and down over there. And, okay, having that aligned North Star, what are we measuring here?
Yeah.
I think you can have the cleverest systems and the cleverest people in the world. If you don't have that, it generally falls over.
Yeah, absolutely. And it supports more than just being performance driven or you know, kind of understanding what kind of the commercial returns are, it also supports innovation. Right. Because then you've got, you know, you've actually got this sort of this framework or this kind of sandpit to play in that allows you to test and hypothesize around things and leverage the data to actually test your hypotheses to drive creativity and drive innovation without straying too far out that it becomes, you know, something that's really unrealistic.
I'm actually not a fan of the term performance in the sense that we're using it here. Because, and I understand why we use that term, and I use it all the time, but fundamentally, every single piece of communication you put out, regardless of where something is on a linear funnel or on any kind of planning map, should be performance driven.
That's right.
It's just the definition of what performance is.
Yes, exactly.
And that, you know, that is, I think so many, that's a big stumbling block for a lot of people not in marketing to get their head around. Mm-hmm. And it comes back to this attributable value. Mm-hmm. It's not just what is the attributable value, it's you know, how you, what criteria are you placing around, what definitions do you put against attributable?
Yes.
And that's something that, again, I think can really trip organisations up who have so many talented people.
Yes, yes. And also the wealth of data that we have at our fingertips. I mean, let's be honest, you can make it tell the story you want to, you know. And so if you're not really clear and aligned on your sources of truth and then actually what that's telling you, then again, it just becomes way too
unruly. I love the integrity in that because you can tell any story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at the end of the day, if it's simple enough that everyone's got an aligned star, North Star, and there's nowhere to hide, you can stand or fall by that and stand up and be counted if something isn't working. Okay, fine. And what's your point? Innovation. Okay, well, the whole point of innovation is test, learn, evolve.
That's right.
Which, of course, links back to if you don't have that culture embedded,
yeah,
it's all coming together. It's almost like you've thought about this, you know, quite hard.
I'm living and breathing it every day.
I love these conversations, and from a different angle, but in a much smaller sort of part, so am I. But I do love these because, you know, the answer, as you talk about it more, it becomes circular in a really good way. Mm. Everything is linked. Everything, you know, you've talked about process, prioritization, structure, strategy, culture.
I will say one thing though too, like I'm always super honest about this with anyone I speak to, is that like we're not perfect, like we're not, you know, right? It is continually a journey. It's continually how you think about how you need to push the needle, evolve and grow it's the progress over perfection.
But it's a culture, that is, again, it's cultural, Gemma. Mm-hmm. If you have the license and the remit to be able to say, we're not perfect. In a world where everyone's trying to pretend that everything is perfect, you're going to get better results.
Yeah.
Because you're able to course correct without having to worry about someone leaning in from the wrong angle. So, I mean, it's great. I love hearing about your success. You haven't always worked client side, though, have you?
No.
And I don't say this to everyone. I mean, I've got the term "the truly remarkable" purely because, yes, it spans London, New York, and Australia, and fair enough, a lot of people have worked in those three. But Bermuda, you just started Bermuda. I mean,
I did.
Amazing. So you've dealt on agency side, brand partnership side, and now marketing and client and commercial side. And you know, I did spy on your profile as you do, and I'm particularly interested in your move from Vice Media in 2017. That's when your sort of your, if I can simplify it, your journey to client side began.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And lots of people do try and make that shift. And I think it's quite hard to make that shift personally. What skill sets did you have to really pick up to be successful as you have been? Versus what skill sets did you bring from fresh from the outside that you felt actually benefited where you were going?
Mm. That's a good question. I mean, well, first, just coming from Vice into a corporate organisation was...
It's like your world must have exploded. I mean,
a baptism of fire.
Different
for
thing.
Sure.
Yeah,
that was super interesting. And not to mention, obviously, the move to Bermuda on top of that. So, like, from New York to Bermuda. So that was definitely just a cultural shock. A good one, though. I think the stretch for me was really sharpening my commercial acumen because, obviously, I had the marketing chops and I'd been in Adland and you know, kind of working with brands for pretty much my whole career. So that part of it I felt, you know, very comfortable in. But really what I had to learn about was where all the other parts of the kind of the commercial organization. What are they? What do they do? How do they fit? Sales, category, you know, trade, marketing, innovation, revenue growth management, you know, really having to kind of look at all those different components, coupled with actually how do you grow brands through, you know, through marketing and media and so forth. So that was definitely a learning curve, a stretch for me. And I've continued to really try and lean into that in my career here at Asahi Beverages, just knowing that's where I've really wanted to build more competencies around. Mm-hmm. And then what did I bring to them? Well, I think really because I came from Vice, they were looking for something, I think, to help bring more of that cultural relevance piece to the brands at the time that I was working on. The particular brand I was working on, Grey Goose, which is still one of my favourite brands to this day, had become quite old and pretentious and white, I would say.
Yeah.
And we wanted to, again, make it more, appeal to a younger audience and a more diverse audience. And so, again, I kind of brought that cultural perspective and that cultural insight to help reposition that brand.
Look, it's a really interesting balance, but that explosion you talk about, you know, it's such a steep learning. I think you're underplaying it. I think that's a really steep learning curve, and I think agencies, you know, I do so much work with agencies, and it is incredible how limited a perspective they actually have on that when they're putting forward ideas or talking about marketing, and, you know, just no concept of actually the stakeholders you guys have to manage internally.
That's right.
And it was a baptism fire for me on the consultancy side when I came out of agencies, and we do structural work, and we talk with our clients. We look at how marketing is structured as part of an overall organization with its agency.
Mm.
And I remember being surprised 10, 15 years ago when I started doing this, that there was so much complexity even then.
Yeah.
And I'm not accounting for the last 15 years of additional sort of things. So
what I tell my team is now, like, one of our principles, you've got to know the numbers. Like, you've got to get comfortable with the numbers, and the numbers that come through and acronyms and all sorts, that just is a different language to certain people, particularly agency people sometimes, but it's really important at least to know the foundations and the basics, so you can actually, you know, your pitches are stronger, your pitches are more commercially robust, and you really know what you're kind of driving for, you know, your partners.
Well, kudos to you so far, particularly for Bermuda. I just love it. I love that you worked in Bermuda. So you're the first person I've ever met who worked in Bermuda.
Trinity P3.
Finally, let's talk a bit quickly about the future. You know, lots of talk about AI, and that's just in society as much as anything else. Lots of talk about diversity or lack of it in advertising. I mean, International Women's Day is coming up. Mm-hmm. People have very mixed views about that. And lots of talk around the inefficiencies of the programmatic media supply chain as well. I mean, just I'm picking three at random there. But what are your big call-outs for the future? What's on your radar, both internally and with your agency partners?
Mm-hmm. I think a big one for us, what's on our radar right now, is how we continue to evolve our media model. And the media model meaning everything from, like, our team to how we're working with partners and media owners into the platforms, understanding the algorithms, modern media mechanics, you know, how we're, again, creating that firepower in our engine around having a modern media model. So I think that's a big one, you know, really thinking about, again, continuing to be, we've talked about this,
yes,
being ecosystem driven, you know, having putting the customer at the heart, the consumer at the heart, you know, being less channel led through our planning approach. And so that's a big piece of work, I think, for us at a portfolio level, and how we kind of drive that more kind of modern media model forward in our organization and embed that. I think looking at AI, since you mentioned it, you know, how can you not be thinking about that? But what's, I think, really important for us is, what are the value-based initiatives or use cases for us that make sense in our business? And we're looking at a number of those in our world. There are some obvious ones that make sense. You know, how can we start using AI to really challenge us to think about how our products can be better and how we can be adapting consumer needs, obviously how we can be more efficient with driving automation and all that stuff, but how can we be more predictive?
Yeah.
So I think that's a big one. And then I think another big piece for us is, again, it's tying into that sort of the modern media world, but it's bigger. It's when we look at our organization and all the touch points that we have across physical and digital, how is that, how are we connecting that, and how are we connecting fragmented tech touch points, fragmented data sets, and really kind of creating advanced analytics around that, not only to support our business, but also be better partnering in with our customers and our retail partners, again, to be driving shared outcomes with them.
Yeah, it's not surprising that you go there, particularly the media piece, but you really articulated that well, what it spreads beyond, not least of which because really these are the biggest lines on your budget. I mean, at the end of the day, the investment into these, what you just talked about, is massive. So, I mean, you said it a couple of times and you're right, it's a continuous curve, right? No one's ever perfect in this space because it's constantly moving on, but channeling that technology, particularly AI as well, I mean, channeling, you know, as a force for good, as opposed to for anything else, I think is a massive one too. So, look, those are big watch outs. You have your work out. No more going back to Bermuda for any time soon for you. That's for sure.
No holidays for me.
Hey, look, I've loved talking with you, Gemma. It's been really interesting. Your insights are, really remarkable, and as is your role here. I wish you continued success, more success at Asahi Beverages going forward.
Thank you so much. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you.